Grief is like the ocean. Sometimes the water is calm and you feel you're going to be okay. Sometimes it comes in a wave that overpowers you and knocks you to the ground, wondering whether you have progressed in any way at all. And there's more to the connection between water and grief. Many of the physical symptoms of dehydration are like our experience of grief. We feel lightheaded, we are tired, weak, thirsty. Part of the work of grief is rehydrating not only our body, but also our heart. Just as we add water to make a meal of something that's being dehydrated, we need living water to revive us, to renew our life and spirit. And how do we get living water? Well, we drink, but we also stretch, we go for a walk, we take a break to breathe deep, we talk to a dear friend, we rest, we find our prana, our chi, the source of life itself, and we reconnect to it. Welcome home. This is Mind the Body, and I'm your host, Elena Diaz. Let's get started. When you're grieving, you spend quite a lot of time pretending that you're fine. Sometimes it's just a matter of being practical and just get through your day, but some of the times you don't feel ready to face your deep thoughts and feelings, and listen, that's fine. We can totally switch on to autopilot and get some things done, or just buy us some time, as to say. But the truth is, that struggle to avoid your feelings and your thoughts, that is where the real strength comes in. Because strength in the context of grief is much different than most accepted definitions. It feels like the total opposite, actually. It feels like intentionally allowing yourself to be wounded and weakened by staring painful thoughts, emotions, and memories in the eye. And then, instead of trying to defeat them, you go and say, "You are a part of me now." You show strength through the small and humble acts of bravery you take on every day. Things like getting out of bed and walking around in an unfamiliar world filled with sharp edges. Things like reaching out and open up about your pain when you'd rather spend the days in your shell. Strength is opening that box of memories, even though you know it will make you cry. It's saying their name out loud in public for the first time in that casual conversation. Strength in grief is acknowledging, feeling, and expressing emotion. Recently, I've come across a very powerful yet simple ritual that can help you understand your grief, create a healthier relationship with it, maybe find some relief. This ritual is included in the book Light Magic for Dark Times, written by New York City-based author Lisa Marie Vasile, and it's a water ritual for grief and trauma. So this is not your regular bath or shower to wash yourself, but more of a conscious emotional cleansing action. The whole book itself is like an accessible and modern collection of practices, rituals, and even spells to help you cope in times of crisis, including grief. And it also works as a guide to self-care. And as we were saying before, Lisa Marie Vasile talks here about that strength that comes from our shadows, that light that emerges from our darkness. So it is an easy reading because it's written wonderfully, but it is also designed to open the Pandora box of your pains and fears. So if you want to practice this ritual, make sure you're ready for it. The author, Lisa Marie Vasile, was generous enough to grant me permission to share this ritual on the podcast, so I'm just going to read it for you. Take a bath, quiet your mind. Become clean of all residue, psychic and physical. If you have a bath soak or an oil you like, use it. This is the time to be okay with the pain. Close the door, cry, remain still, be aware of the grief. Let it move through you. Be naked with it. I like to use rose oil in my bath. To me, rose is potent and balanced. It smells beautiful, but it has thorns like our emotional processes. So much of grief is exercising strength in public, on buses, in the street with other family members, and with yourself during times when you need to sleep or eat or work. That is exhausting. In this ritual, you're allowing grief to run through you while simultaneously cleansing yourself of it. Your tears will fill the bath. You will bathe in your sorrow and you will also go back to the root self, nude, defenseless, alone. This may sound frightening, it is, but it's so good to say you're free to feel. If you want to, speak to your dead, pray, invoke something. Think on that black stone in your chest and all the hurt it contains. All those memories and fears and all that suffering. In your mind, bathe glittering white light. Soothe it. Tell it that you're thankful for it, storing all that darkness for you. Imagine it settling, closing, taking the pain with it until the next time you need it. Imagine the rest of your body flooded with beautiful, clear light, and let yourself be the altar for good. Be at the altar of yourself. I believe water is the most potent element. It is what we are made of. It is the ultimate destructive force, and yet it is also the most freeing. In the water, you are as connected to the earth as you could be. Grounding, the act of touching the natural elements, is a powerful tool. It returns us to our authentic selves, and it eliminates all the messiness of life and expectation. It is a dazzling, simple way to come home. When you finally drain the tub, sit with it. Do not get out. Talk to the sorrow. Let it know that it is okay. Let your dead know it's okay to linger sometimes. Let your body know it's okay to feel. But then also ask that you have strength and resolve when you need it. Say whatever you need to say to yourself or something else. Send white glittering light to your dead, to those who are affected by sadness and to anyone who hurt you, if you feel comfortable. This act is radical and generous, but it's not always something we feel compelled to do, and that's okay. The water draining symbolizes the switch. Now you can go back to your life and not let the grief overtake you at all moments. You have created a place and time for it. Thank the water, it is always there for you. It's a friend, a deity, a comfort. It will always be there as an altar for your sadness and your peace. Thanks again to Lisa Marie Vasile. This was a beautiful, beautiful text. Years ago, I was in Madrid, Spain, and I started my training to become a yoga teacher. We were around 15 people in that group. Marilyn, who was to become my wife and mommy number one of our child, was there. And there was also this very skinny girl with huge dark eyes and a contagious smile. Her name was Mila. She was originally from Bulgaria, but at that time she'd been living in Spain for more than 10 years. She hardly had any accent, apart from that odd funny word she came up with. We instantly became good friends. She liked to talk like a lot. She was intense and passionate and curious about everything. A bit like a child discovering the world. We would meet up and walk without a purpose. Just because she was so in love with Madrid, she never got tired of exploring and wandering around the crowded streets of her neighborhood. End of 2014, I moved to London, where I started collaborating with the Drop-In Bereavement Center, among others. Mila and I would often talk on the phone. She always had plenty of stories to share, and she was always so excited to get my news too. 2 years later, she took a holiday trip back to Bulgaria, but things didn't go as planned there. She started feeling a discomfort in the stomach, a weird sensation that something was not quite right. And back in Spain, the diagnosis. Some words that you are never ready to hear together. Cancer, stomach, liver. Not so much to be done. She lasted hardly 8 months after that, gradually fading like a candle on its last bits of wax. I traveled to Madrid from London twice. The first was short after her diagnosis, and the second was just one day before she died. So yes, I got to say goodbye to her, a real proper goodbye, whispering in her ears a few words that I will forever keep in my heart. Does that help? Well, I can't really know. What I do know is that it's been more than 3 years. This is the first time that I'm able to talk about her without bursting in tears. And that just because I'm holding back a lot here to try and produce a half a decent podcast, my folks. But anyway, yeah. What I really wanted to share with you is that Mila's death took a toll on my physical body, apart of all the emotional toll. My throat and my voice had always been a weak spot for me, but since she passed, this has gotten more extreme, up to the point that I would completely lose my voice once or twice every year. And then there is that semi-constant feeling that I'm having a knot in my throat, and that increases when I think or when I talk of her, like I am triggering the exact spot where she is sitting. I'm a yoga teacher, I know my chakras and that. I do know that the throat is the fifth chakra and that is connected to communication, things we say, things we don't say, how we talk, how we listen. I know I would like to turn back time and pick up the phone all those times that I just didn't because I was so busy and she was always so chatty. And I would really listen to her when she came up with all those issues that for me at the time were not that important. But she's not here anymore, so I'm just trying to acknowledge all this and be okay with it, with my sadness, with my anger, with my guilt. And for me personally, that does help. And just to close this chapter, let me tell you something else about Mila. She loved salsa music.
Vamos a tocar soneros, toquemos de corazón, y en este bonito día vamos a hacer un rumbo, y si del alma brota letra, armonía y sazón, son estos los ingredientes para componer un son. Oye, ya que la fiesta está buena, se juntaron los soneros, vamos a tocar un son, que lo escuche el mundo entero.
rompa un tumbao y el bongo que se destaque, que no me quedo callado. Toca la clave, suena el bongo, hazme un tumbao, que lo demás lo pongo yo.
The physical benefits of dancing have been known for years. It can improve your cardiovascular functions and reduce the risk of many chronic diseases. It increases your lower body strength and your core strength, and also your balance and coordination and so many other benefits. But there is also growing medical evidence about the mental and emotional health benefits of dancing. It can improve your brain cognitive abilities. It can reduce stress, increase levels of the feel-good hormone serotonin. There are multiple studies that show that people dancing on a regular basis report higher self-esteem and more confidence than before. Serotonin is a neurotransmitter involved in many brain and body functions, so it is definitely too complicated to just call it the feel-good hormone. But it is also true that it has a main role in regulating mood and emotions. And this is a two-way interaction, with serotonin influencing mood and mood influencing serotonin. And there are natural ways to increase serotonin levels. Eating food that contain tryptophan, like salmon, nuts and seeds, eggs, tofu and soy, milk and cheese, pineapple. Also getting enough exposure to sunlight, at least 15 minutes outside every day, even when it's cloudy. Also regular physical activity, like dancing. And I'm not going to lie, dancing is always more fun when done with other people, but especially if you're not feeling that confident in your abilities or a bit shy, dancing at home just with yourself is the best you can do to begin with. And if you used to enjoy dancing classes before COVID, talk to your friends and try dancing together virtually now. That can work. You can dance just for the sheer pleasure of it, and that works beautifully as a therapy on its own. But there is also this more conscious way of using music and dance as a cathartic act. Martha Graham, who is considered the mother of modern dance, once said, "The body says what words cannot." And well, this lady danced for over 70 years, so she knew what she was talking about. She was born in Pennsylvania, United States, in 1894, and she had overall quite an interesting life. If you Google her and have a read, I'm sure you won't be disappointed. One of the things she got famous for is the contraction and release method, which somehow was against that illusion of dancers being weightless and ethereal. To explain this technique and a bit more about Martha Graham herself, allow me to share with you part of an old interview with Janet Eilber, who started as a dancer under Martha Graham direction and currently is the artistic director of the company herself. Let's have a listen.
Hello, my name is Janet Eilber. For most of my career as a dancer, I performed with a dance company directed by Martha Graham. Martha is known as one of the great creative minds of the 20th century because she revolutionized the world of dance. Early in her career as a dancer in the 1920s and 30s, Martha was a pioneer of a new art form called modern dance. Modern dance evolved out of a revolt against traditional ballet. Ballet often presented dances which were escapes into other worlds with beautiful dancing animals or flowers or mythical people. Modern dance was, and still is, concerned with presenting real human issues and finding a way to communicate about life as we experience it. As part of this revolt, Martha was determined to find a way of moving that described our own individual thoughts or emotions. She often said her dances charted a graph of the heart, and she created a new way of moving that had never been seen before. In the dances that follow, you'll see how Martha took emotion and transformed it into physical expression. In 1930, Martha created a dance called Lamentation. Throughout this short work, the dancer is seated on a bench and shrouded in fabric. This costume, which is stretched and pulled by the dancer, was well ahead of its time, and it accentuates the conflict and the emotion of the dance. A lamentation is an expression of overwhelming grief. The figure in this piece is struggling with intense sadness, but you should look for many other emotions and ideas in this dance. There are anger and denial, even confusion. The figure searches for comfort or understanding, and there are moments of intense stillness or control that explode into great silent cries.
This dancing piece that Janet Aylber is talking about, Lamentation, is less than 4 minutes in length, and if you have the chance, I truly recommend you to watch it on YouTube. But for now, what we can do here is just close our eyes and recreate the dance in our minds, following Janet's beautiful description. Get ready, here it comes.
Martha based the movement in Lamentation on recognizable everyday gestures. In fact, the ballet starts with the dancer shaking her head as if to say no. This rocking gesture becomes much bigger. The dancer throws her body from side to side as if she doesn't know which way to turn. She lifts her hand and tries to stop the whole idea or reaches out for some kind of help. She tries to control herself and stop the pain, but this only breaks into another great sob or cry.
Something very interesting about Martha Graham is that she spent quite a lot of time studying ancient traditions and their connection to dance. Today, it is common knowledge that dance has been an important part of ceremony, rituals, celebrations, and entertainment since before the birth of the earliest human civilizations. Archaeology delivers traces of dance from prehistoric times in places like India and Egypt. And that takes us to our second element, Earth. So if you want to know more about ancient and modern grief ceremonies from all around the world and more interesting stuff, stay tuned for our next episode. This was Mind the Body, a podcast funded by Newham COVID-19 Community Grant from Newham Local Authority, produced and created by me, Elena Diaz, for all beneficiaries and friends of the Drop-In Bereavement Centre in London, UK. Thanks for listening and have a beautiful day.